The last count, I think, there's only 753 Celtic fans podcasts out there, so thanks for taking the time to listen to and download this particular one, the longest running football fans podcast from CelticUnderground.net. So we've got two guests that we've not had on for quite a while. We've got Lackey Moore and another guest, Duncan from Glasgow Rocks fame, who since the Ferencváros podcast has been demanding his time on the podcast to give me a verbal kicking for how the podcast had dropped from its usual high standards and was abusive and aggressive about Neil Lennon. So we give Duncan that opportunity now, and he does it. So enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Lackey Moore and Duncan. So I am joined after the midweek game. I'm joined by two people who've not been on the podcast for a while. I'm joined by Lackey Moore and I'm joined by Duncan. So first up, Lackey Moore, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
How's splendid isolation of Dumfries and Galloway region?
Oh, it's fine. Although I believe there's periodic influxes of many, you know, these caravanettes with English numbers on them, which is irritating the locals. We should have shut the border.
It wouldn't just be English people there, though. There'll be people from all over Scotland who'll be going down as well.
Yeah, there was a woman on last week on the television, on the radio, I think it was Col K, who announced that she was coming from Inverness to Dumfriesshire for Easter, and nothing was going to stop her.
There you go. So, Duncan, how are you doing?
I'm very well, sir. Very well. Good to see you again.
How's Glasgow Rocks coping?
They're coping. I mean, they're surviving. Therefore, that's a success this year. It's not been a great season, sporting wise, for me this year. I'm quite glad to see the back of it in both basketball and football, I think. But yeah, we're still alive, and we'll be there to start again next season, which I'm marking that up as a win.
Well, actually, isn't that in lots of ways the key to success of 2020-21? Be there when it's finished.
Aye, absolutely.
Lackey, you're a more balanced person. You've not been on for some time, and Duncan, you were someone that I promised a right of reply back in August, but circumstances were such that never quite materialised, that right of reply. So we'll get there. First up, the game last night. I have to talk about that first of all. So who wants to go first? Who wants to talk about that game? So, Lackey, do you want to go first?
I don't mind. I thought it was pretty grim viewing. The last few weeks, I think I said it on Twitter, it's been like watching Painting by Numbers. And the team seemed completely devoid of passion and sometimes even energy. And it seems to me that if other teams are prepared to outwork them, then they'll struggle. It's always been my theory that if Celtic worked harder than any other team in this league, they would win because they're better players. But in recent months, they've been getting outworked and outthought by teams that they should be putting to the sword. And last night, I thought, was tedious and extreme. A very careless performance. Although, as soon as they get the free kick, I said to Irene, they'll score here. Sure of it. And they did. And Duncan, I couldn't see Celtic coming back.
Duncan?
Yeah, I mean, I echo what George says there. I mean, and I said, funnily enough, exactly the same thing to my son when they got the free kick. And my exact words were, here we go. There was actually an expletive in between here. Are we in go? But I could see it coming. And it was... I had a horrible feeling, even just because the team's sort of been picking itself the last few weeks. And I'm old school. I like when we go with two strikers. And when I seen that it was Edward on his own, and it was sort of Christie and Rogic up there, I'd have preferred one of the other three strikers that were currently got on our books at the moment. But yeah, it was a poor game, and I've sort of fallen into a trap now where I can pretty much call a performance in the first 5 minutes of the game. And I thought, we're not at this at all. And I assumed when I seen the Christie chance, I said to myself, that must have bobbled. And it didn't. It comes to it perfectly. And I think we could still be there yet and not have scored. So it was very, very frustrating and disappointing. And as an aside, a Sunday night at 7:30 doesn't work for me as a slot for Scottish football. I'm not sure where that came from.
I mean, I think in the past that Tom Rogic has done some great things in the Celtic teams, but the last few weeks I sit and wonder, why is he playing? Because his lack of energy, I don't think he's won a tackle in the last four games. And he's out on that right side, and it's just painful watching him. It's like a guy goes through the motions. And to have four, I think there are four left-footed midfield players, are there? McGregor, Rick Christie, him, and is Turnbull left-footed? No, he's
no,
two-footed.
Right.
Yeah, he's got two-footed. But to have three out of the four all left-sided and two of them are playing on the right, makes no sense whatsoever. There's no balance to the team. None at all. And the inability to get to the byline and create chances is quite alarming.
We don't really have any width in the team. There's no natural width there in the team. And then if you have got your fullbacks, or the three fullbacks we used yesterday, Kenny looks functional. Taylor always puts in a shift and lacks out, but none of them have got a final ball. But we're hardly getting a chance to see that because there's just no width in the team, and it's just very congested, very, very congested.
Do you think that Kenny is an upgrade on Ralston? Because I don't.
I think he's an upgrade in Ralston. I'm not sure he's an upgrade on Lustig. But
no.
I think he's a bang average. I mean, he could be playing. The fact that he's come from Everton, he's a player that could be playing at Kilmarnock or Motherwell and wouldn't really stand out. I'm not sure. He's very like Greg Taylor for me.
And a couple of games that he played Ralston recently, I think when they were all under quarantine, Ralston played well. He didn't play badly. I've never thought he got a fair crack in a whip.
And if we're going to go down that route, I mean, somebody like O'Donnell for me is a better fullback. And all right, he doesn't fit our model because of his age, but I'd rather have somebody like him. But we don't really have any fullbacks that I would consider first choice.
I wasn't suggesting Ralston is a long-term future. I was suggesting that the guy they brought in and are paying a big wage from a Premiership club, isn't he any better than him? From what we've seen, he's bang average.
I think
that's what we've agreed.
Yeah, we're furiously agreeing here.
So why bring him in? In fact, I don't think at the moment they should be playing any lone players at all. Because there are young players in that squad who are not even getting a look at the team. Like Henderson and Mikey Johnson, they are sitting on the bench while he brings on Elianusi every week for the last 10 minutes. And that seems utterly pointless to me. It indicates there's no thought of developing the team or giving these boys a chance to play. And at the moment, I think they'll secure third place even by playing their own young players. It just makes no sense. It smacks of really rank bad coaching and rank bad management.
So, yeah, I think we're agreeing that we've got average players. That is the problem. And our fullbacks are average. I think that's what we're sort of agreeing on here. So you're saying there, George, about excuse me, the manager playing lone players, and you wouldn't play them.
Not at all. No. I don't see any point in terms of taking us forward in any way and playing these guys now that the reason for bringing them in, which was to try and secure 10 in a row, it's gone. So we should really be focusing on the players who are going to be there next season.
And I actually, while I was waiting to come on, I sat down here and wrote a bunch of players down. What I find terrifying for next season, you mentioned loan. The four players that we've got on loan are Duffy, Laxalt, Elyounoussi, and Kenny. I don't think anybody thinks that any of the four of them are going to be there next year.
That's my point.
If you also factor in, there's, in my opinion, at least four players in that team that don't want to be there, in Chris Ayer, Ryan Christie, Edward, and Rogic. Let's assume all four of them move in the summer. When you then, you take that's eight players out of a, and you then think about players, you think, okay, well, who then is good enough to be starting for us next season? And I would say, I've actually only written down four players, because I've wrote down the players that I've said aren't good enough for first choice, in my opinion, are Bain, Hazard, and Barca. So that's three goalies. Taylor, Welsh. I don't think Sorrow is going to be a first pick every week, and he's not ready for it. Mikey Johnson, if he was going to be a good player, he'd have been one by now. Ayeti, Griffiths, and Klamala are nowhere near the level that I think we need from strikers. And I think Scott Brown, if he's still there next season, will be used sparingly. It only leaves us with McGregor, Turnbull, Forrest, and when he comes back, Julien.
Yeah.
And that terrifies me.
I think you're right. Some of them, I think you're right. But I still think that if they're technically on our books, the Celtic players, next season, they should at least be getting a chance to play just now to see whether or not they can cut the mustard. I mean, yeah. I'm not sure that if Klamala wasn't playing every week, he might eventually show something. But the way he's being used can be doing nothing for his confidence. And at least he works.
You get a shift off Klamala.
And Megan was injured. He had a bad injury. But he was a very promising young player.
Yeah, but he seems to have been around for a while, but I just think there's a whole bunch of players there that are good, might be good, used to be good, possibly could be good, but judging them just now, I wouldn't have any of them in the team for next season. But you can't just have three or four players, and I don't think we're going to be seeing Julien for a long, long time.
Well, he said the other day on the radio, 9 months.
Aye. It could be Christmas, I think, before we see him. So that is pretty terrifying that when you think we've gone from last season, all we've really lost from last season is Fraser Forster. Well, he's a big loss. But how does it go so bad so quickly? Again, that's like the million-dollar question. But there's a whole bunch of players in there that are loans that are going back, don't want to be here. And as far as I'm concerned, if you don't want to be here, then you go. And then a whole bunch that aren't quite good enough. And it leaves a three or four players that are up to it, which is pretty terrifying.
But isn't that part of the challenge now that, it's all well and good saying there's four players who don't want to be there. And the reason they don't want to be there is because they think they can get better wages. No doubt they can get better wages somewhere else, which is fine. But in the current economic climate, you need someone to come in and pay. Even if we assess that the market has slashed values in the last 12 months because of COVID, you still need someone to come in and make an offer for Christie, Ayer, Edward, and
Rogic.
So you need the offers to come in, and you need the offers to come in the region that we are looking at, and you need the offers to come in from a club that those players want to go to. So that's part of the challenge. I think your point about the loans there, George, is it's the big dilemma the club now finds itself in, as I see it, which is the agenda of the club should be to plan for next season, to assess the players who are likely to be around next season and to get as much game time into them as possible. The agenda for, I mean, you know, just as an outsider looking in, the agenda for the manager would be, again, if he believes he's got a chance of being Celtic manager next season, fine. Even if he accepts that he's not got a chance of being Celtic manager next season, his agenda will be getting the best that he can get from this point forward, either to persuade people that he should, that this season's been a series of unfortunate events that have impacted on his ability to move things forward, or because he's wanting to salvage his reputation because he would like to get a job with somebody else after this finishes. But either way, his agenda will, for me, his agenda is slightly, and I'm not criticising him for having this agenda, I'm just saying, as an outsider looking in, his agenda is at odds with the clubs at the moment.
That's why I don't understand this persevering with it.
Yeah, but I think I agree with you there, Brian. I think you as a manager, you're going to pick the players that you believe give you the best chance of getting the result on the day. You, every now and then, if you're 20 points clear in the league, that's why you suddenly see kids getting a turn at the end of the season when we've been home and hosed with 5 and 6 games to go. But yeah, you put the players in. And I don't like the loans. I think it's unfair. I think it's an unfair system, loans. I don't think that any club, we shouldn't be able to get a player like El Yunusi that I'm guessing is earning £60,000-£70,000 a week and at a transfer fee of 15-16 million. We shouldn't be allowed to get a player like that and play them. I think it gives us, and everybody else, an unfair competitive advantage, bringing players in that you can't afford. But I think in these players, the 4 loans that we've had, I imagine that when we brought them in, that there was a possibility that if these guys pull up trees and they really work, then we might look to bring them to the club full-time. I imagine that we thought that with Laxalt and El Yunusi and Duffy. I don't know about Kenny. But I imagine that the intention was, well, if these guys do a good job for us, then they're within our grasp to bring them in permanently. The fact that all, well, certainly 3 of them, Duffy, Laxalt and El Yunusi, haven't been any good, in my opinion. And we wouldn't want to be going the extra yard and pushing the boat out to bring those players to Celtic Park, even if they wanted to be there full time. I just don't like the loan system. But you've got to do it and play the game.
Yeah, when I see El Yunusi, I think he has ability, but I can understand why he wasn't getting a game at Southampton, because he seems to be a peripheral figure. But I don't know why they ever signed Duffy. Before they signed him, I questioned why you would go to teams that were relegated and are always fighting relegation battles to sign defenders. But even in the first couple of games, when he scored goals and people were thinking he was the bee's knees, balls were played down the middle and he caused chaos with the goalkeeper because of his inability to read them. And I thought, this guy's hopeless. And I'm not being smart after the event. I said to him, this guy's a dumpling.
I mean, I must admit, and in all honesty, when we signed him, I was quite pleased with signing him. But I'd be a liar if I said that I'd watched a lot of him playing. But when you look at the number of games he's played, even in the Premier League, the number of games he's played for the Republic of Ireland, the fact he's their captain, the fact that he's got a wee bit of a love for Celtic in some way, it made sense to me. But then, right from the get-go, all right, maybe a good game up at Ross County, maybe, but right from the get-go, he's just looked all over the place. And you think, how can somebody that's had a good career up until now go so badly, so quickly? And he just looks... He looks all over the place, over the place. But I did think at the time when we brought him in, I remember we brought him in, and then like the day or two after we brought him in, he scored for the Republic of Ireland in a game that was on. And I was quite excited about him coming. And I don't know, I sometimes think the number of Irish players we brought in over the years, I think, is unbelievable. And I think there's a pandering to an element there that Irish kids, fans like that. Does it work for me? Maybe we thought John Joe Kenny was Irish as well.
Well, the name sounded right.
It did, but I mean, I'm not particularly specifically averse to the loan system. I think, you know, the point you've made there, Duncan, of you know, Edouard's a good example. There's a young player at PSG that we think's got a chance of doing something at Celtic, but obviously he's not had enough game time. So bring him in on loan with an option to buy so that we can assess him in our setup. So from that perspective, I think it works. I just think I agree with George about from this point forward, I don't see the value in playing loan players who are not going to be here. I mean, the only thing, I suppose, if Julian's injured, Beaton's injured, and we're, you know, there's only so many centre-halves that we've got at the club. So there might be an element of Duffy plays because El Hamed's gone away, who is another option. There's only so many options that we've got at the club for centre-half, and you might end up having to play Duffy, which then gets into the issue. I see lots of people talking about, one, there's a high volume of players, not just the loan players, the high volume of players who either this is the year at the end of their contract, or this summer is 1 year to go in their contract. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going to get any value for them, this is the summer to shift them. But I also see a lot of people online with the usual, this is the worst Celtic team ever and we need to sell them all stuff. And it always gets me thinking about the changeover from Ronnie Dyla to Brendan Rodgers, when I can remember having exactly the same types of conversations on this podcast about Brendan Rodgers will need to do a massive clear out. And then as everybody kept talking about 2 years into Brendan Rodgers' reign, and he was playing with a Ronnie Dyla team.
Yeah.
So the issue then is, what is the problem this season? Is it bad recruitment? Is it the manager? Is it a whole load of circumstances? Is it a combination of all of those? What's your thoughts, George?
Well, I think the doubts about the manager emerged right at the start of the season when they were knocked out of the European Cup with that bizarre team selection, when he started without a striker and three strikers on the bench, and these ludicrous comments about not being match fit, having already praised Klamala, for example, for the work he'd done to get fit. So that night, I mean, I found it strange. I didn't watch that game because, you know, I find it hard to watch these games. It's too nerve-wracking. But I then watched it, and she came in and she said, do you know, if they play like that the whole season, they'll do all right, because the goals that team scored were individual errors, and Celtic actually played quite well, she thought. But then they came out and slaughtered the team. And I thought, well, you picked the wrong team, and your tactic of slaughtering them up afterwards certainly wasn't going to get them to rally to the cause. And from then on, I think it's been just a catalogue of mismanagement. Now, I was quite happy. In fact, I thought it was the only thing they could do when Brendan left was to get him, because he understood what it was about and he got us over the line. But I couldn't believe it when he was appointed permanently. And this nonsense about he was the only real candidate. I thought, well, my goodness. It took me back to when he left. And I thought he did okay first time round. But I think we've talked about this before, that Ronnie was come in with his bizarre ideas about diet, health and fitness. And I remember reading that the young woman that they paid money to, a salary, as the dietitian, said that Ronnie was the first time the manager had ever spoken to her about players' diets. And I thought, well, that says something about the previous manager. And of course, Ronnie had a hard road to hoe with that one. But Brendan Rodgers cracked the whip and things got a lot better. But when he came back, I thought as a temporary thing, it was inspired. But the idea that they appointed him as manager, I thought was going back into the dark ages. And I heard a thing the other day, and folk may not agree with it, but I thought it was a good summary of what we have. And it says that Neil was an analogue manager in a digital game. And I think that sums it up. And if he were there next season, I dread to think what will happen.
Do you think, I mean, this is the thing that I find interesting, Duncan, about the Celtic support online, because, and you know, I'll say this as well, we were all praising the recruitment in the summer. I mean, granted, it's from a position of you're just reading somebody's CV rather than the player, but you're looking at, okay, so we brought Elianoussi, we've kept Elianoussi. We have brought in Ayeti, who we were interested in before West Ham signed him for £12 million. We signed a goalkeeper. We couldn't get Fraser Foster, but we signed a goalkeeper who's played Champions League football and international football. We signed the Ireland captain. You know, we're signing, we're making a change. We're not signing projects. We're signing oven-ready first-team players. Yet, if you were to now go online, one of the big things that people would be criticising would be the goalkeeper was a £5 million waste of money. Ayeti's hardly getting a game and doesn't look up for it when he plays. Duffy's a bomb scare, as we've just talked about. Laxalt's we signed him from AC Milan, and he's no better than Greg Taylor, as we've talked about. Do you think the recruitment has been part of the issue?
I mean, a couple of questions in there, Brian, and I think that you said it yourself about online and the way that people communicate and behave online, I find horrible. And that's a comment on society, not necessarily football, but football is even worse sometimes. But it brings out the worst in people in terms of things they say and the aggression and the downright meanness and horrible way that some people comment on individuals or what happened. I mean, when it comes to our club, I've been embarrassed, absolutely embarrassed about the way our fans have behaved this season. Not all of our fans, obviously, but when you see, you mentioned in the summer there, everybody was quite happy with the recruitment for all the reasons you've just given, but even the club doubled down because it also retained everybody. It retained Edward and it didn't sell anybody. The only player that left of any note was Fraser Foster, and I don't think that we could retain him financially. So the club did back. Now, we didn't buy well. We didn't buy well. I don't think any Celtic fan would disagree that we've recruited poorly. And I don't know what the recruitment process is at Celtic Park, but the reaction from fans towards the team and the players, and when I seen that, I think it was November. I think it was when we went out the League Cup to Ross County, I think, and you had a baying mob, pitchforks and flaming torches outside the stadium, throwing stones and stuff at players' cars. Celtic fans doing this to Celtic players. And then that night, you know what, I live up, there's a couple of players that I live very close to around here. The police sat outside their doors. Police sat outside the door of our manager because there'd been threats made against them. I find that absolutely disgusting. And our fans have a great reputation, but I think we've really shown ourselves, an element of our fan base has shown ourselves to be quite repulsive this season. And I have a saying that, yeah, cerebral or terrible, you make your mind up what you are. If you're a thinker, think it through. Absolutely, say your piece. If you don't think something's right, let's say it. But to behave in the way that we have, I found it really, really embarrassing. It's not a good look for our club. Everybody's disappointed. Of course we are. This is going to be a tremendous season. It hasn't gone the way that we hoped it would for many reasons. But, I mean, we've just finished a period of the most successful domestic dominance in the history of world football. And all we can do is throw stones at our players and our CEO, who's done a fantastic job, and they're putting banners outside his house in the street. I find it quite repulsive, Brian. I really, really do. I know we're all disappointed. It's not the season we thought we were going to have, but I thought that we were better than this. And I just, this hiding behind pseudonyms and different names online and nobody knows who you are, and it's just not, it's not cool. It's not cool at all, Brian. That's my... You know that's how I feel, and it's been a long time coming, but I've been quite embarrassed over a lot of the stuff that our fans have said and done this season. And we haven't got things right. But so what? What do you do? You're supposed to be we don't care if we win, lose or draw. Well, it looks to me like we only sing when we're winning.
Look, I don't disagree with anything you've said there. In fact, I came off Twitter for months, because I found it just so obnoxious. I went on again 3 weeks ago, just because I wasn't getting any news about Celtic at all, because all the folk I knew from the Glasgow area and people like Brian and that would tweet. I used to get information from them. But I've signed off again, because it hasn't changed any. And I hope you don't think my comments about the manager put me in that category.
Oh, no, absolutely. Everybody has an opinion, absolutely. That's one of the things I love about football. But there's a way of making it, but it's not about you. It's a massive generalisation about an online community, many of which are just vile. And I think it's the lack of respect that a lot have shown to our CEO and to our manager, that have both of them in different ways have delivered so well for this club and love this club to the bones of them, to the root they love this club, and to be treated how they have by some is just really, I think it's disgusting.
Do you know what? I remember, around about the time Rangers went bust, so, you know, nearly 10 years ago, I remember being on this podcast with Eddie Pearson, and we were talking, and we were accepting the irony of what we were saying, and you know, we were part of what we were criticising. But I remember we were saying that one of the issues with social media in general, but if you put it in a football context, was there was always three or four people at the back of the bus that had more extreme or different views to the majority. And they were just, you know, the back of the supporters bus. Yeah. And they were just ignored. But the issue with social media was those three or four people then put their opinion out there and found that there was another three or four people, and there was another three or four people. And if there was 100 supporters buses, actually, there was 400 of those people. So suddenly it was no longer the three or four weird guys at the back. They were able to have that as a consolidated opinion. And I do think there's a difference between passionate people saying something on the spur of the moment. I think this is the other issue that compounds what you're talking about there. We can all send text messages to mates and stuff like that straight after a game, or be walking out of the game. And, you know, how many times have you walked out of Celtic Park? Not that many, fortunately, in the last 10 years. But how many times you walked out of Celtic Park and somebody said, "That's the worst team I've ever seen." And you think, no, it's not. It patently isn't. Unless you've only been going for 2 weeks. That's not the worst team, because I have seen infinitely worse. But it's an instant reaction in a bad mood type feedback that I'm quite sure if you spoke to that person, probably by the time he's going up the steps into Celtic Park for the next game, he would not have that opinion of it. For me, the problem with social media is it then keeps that anger going every day. Because you put something up there and somebody engages you about that the next morning, and then somebody else engages about that, and the conversation just keeps going and going. So that instant reaction of irritation and anger then turns into a fermented long-term mood. And I think at the moment that's compounded by everything we're going through. People are locked up in their houses and they're just generally pissed off. I think that has compounded Celtic's problem this season. Or any entity that's got bad mood people, everybody's extra pissed off because they're locked up.
I get that, Brian. And everybody's had their challenges, like socially and financially and emotionally, in the past 12 months. And I get that, everybody's. But I'm not noticing that much different behaviour. Fans have been horrible. I haven't done social media in 6, 7, 8 years. I came off it because I was like that. I was that guy. I was that guy, and it was liberating coming off Twitter when I did it. I'd ended up in jail, I think, or somebody would have come and put my windies in. It's liberating not being on it, but I get that. We've all been that. I'm not going back. I'll not be back next week, or that is the worst team. And then you do, because that's what you do. But you write something on your Twitter feed or your Instagram or whatever it is you use, or you put a podcast out, you kind of rub that stuff out. That is there. That is your digital footprint. It's there. And it'd be emotional. And you come on a podcast, Brian, and say, if I see Neil Lennon, I'd knock fuck out him.
You never said that, Brian.
Yes, you did.
I did. Well, no,
yes,
I don't.
Yes, you did. That was the exact words. I would knock fuck out him, or I would kick fuck out him. That was how you introduced your podcast.
No, I think I said...
Yes, you did, Brian.
I'd punch him in the face or something like that.
No, I would knock fuck out him or kick fuck out him. Because you hardly ever swear, and that's how you introduce your podcast.
And then the next thing I then said was, the problem is, you'd probably give me a doon.
This is true. I'm sure he'd give us all a doon.
Anthony, who was on with me, said, yeah, I'm sure he would give you a doon. And I then said, yeah, so maybe that's not the right approach to take.
And we're all emotional, and given everything that our manager going through, that I don't think any other manager in football has gone through, in terms of the attacks that he's had in them, not verbally, I'm talking about physically. I think it's right, and I get that, and that's maybe you're metaphorically kicking the dog by doing that, but that you do. I've listened to this podcast for, I don't know, at least 10 years I've listened to this podcast, and I've seen it as being, I'm not going to go out there and say it was highbrow, but it was smarter than your average bear boo-boo. And I thought, but that, the whole thing this season, I've just seen so much of that. And I don't know if Juventus fans behave like this. Juventus, who they're going for 10 in a row this season. But again, it's a mental season. Juve were going for 10 in a row. They're sat sixth in the league just now. Liverpool, who won the league by 20 points last year, are 20 points behind and sat in sixth. PSG, who win the league every year, they're in fourth place. Porto's in third place. It's a mental season. And you then layer on, I'm sure there's been, in my opinion, there's been some bad team selections and some bad choices made. Our players have let us down. Our recruitment's been appalling. I don't think we've been as smart in the dugout, maybe as we could have been. And we should acknowledge that. We're not going to sit here and not say anything. Absolutely. When we're going to criticise, we should be criticising. But we've got to be better. These are the sort of things that we used to laugh. When Rangers went bust, whatever it was, 10, 11 years ago now, we were laughing at this. This was like comedy gold. 2012 was one of the best years of my life. Just what, I had an absolute front row seat to then imploding. And we seem to be doing exactly the same as a fan base, and it's not a good look for us. And they must be pissing themselves at how we're behaving. Yeah, I got that off my chest.
No, you did get it off your chest, and I've been saying to you for months that I would get you on to get it off your chest, and you're right. At the time, it was an element of, I'm so angry, this is how I feel, but you know what, the manager would probably give me a doing. Yeah, he probably would give you a doing. There was an element of trying to be a bit, I'm so angry, this is what I feel like doing, but you know what, in the cold light of day, I realise that's a stupid thing to do because the manager would give me a doon if he did that. That was the attempt of what I was trying to get across. Might not have come across that way, but that was the attempt of it. And you're right. As I've said to people, you know, passionate people can say things straight after the final whistle of a game that 2-3 hours later they wouldn't necessarily say or do. And we recorded that podcast, I think it was 15 minutes after the final whistle. And so, yeah, it was, I'm so angry, this is what I feel like doing. Yeah, however, manager would probably give me a doing. And to the end says, yeah, I think he would. I think he'd win quite comfortably. Yeah, maybe that's not the right thing. Maybe that's not the best tactic then. That was, yeah. Do you know what? With hindsight, the way that people have subsequently behaved, it's probably not it doesn't sound as trying to be a bit tongue-in-cheek as it sounded as I was thinking at the time. But I also agree that the general discourse about the club and the manager has been far too vitriolic.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great quote from Obama when he was running for president. We can surely disagree without being disagreeable.
Mm-hmm.
And yes... hands up, yeah. So that was pretty aggressive, and I'll add it in, the bit that you never mentioned. I also called the manager an effing arsehole on Twitter for not playing a striker. I said something about El Hamed at fault for both goals, and the manager doesn't play a striker until the 78th minute, if an arsehole, right?
Yeah.
But I agree with you. This is going to sound very... I'm trying to think of the right word. Very patronising or whatever. I also agree with you that what we've then seen is a vitriol from people who have a different thought process about how best to deal with the circumstances at Celtic at the time. I think to call, and, you know, I've said to Peter's face that I think he's been overpaid for the last 6-7 years at least. And I've said for 8 years on this podcast that, you know, the day the Rangers died was the day that we could should have completely changed our business model, and we didn't, and that's the criticism. But to then, I think, to have called, whatever you think of the Celtic board, and again, I go to every AGM and stick my hand up and be one of maximum three people in the room who vote against certain members of the board getting re-elected, not because I've got anything against them personally, but because they've been non-executive directors for far too long and shouldn't be there.
I totally agree with you, Brian, and I have very strong opinions on the Celtic board, and I think it's old, I think it's out of touch. And I think you're right on the non-execs. I sit as a non-exec director on a couple of boards. The role of a non-exec is to challenge the board on everything. They're just there to get the blazer. They're happy to be there. It is an old board that absolutely needs changing. I don't think, but again, I don't have a forum to voice that opinion other than the voices in my head. but I think you're absolutely right. And I'm not suggesting for a second, by the way, that we've done everything and that Peter or Neil or anybody can do no wrong. Far from it. This season's been a shit show, top to bottom. Of course it has. There's no getting away from it. And there are mitigating circumstances. But so what? The same circumstances exist for Rangers. And they've stepped up, and they're a totally different proposition this season. Even if we'd have been on our game, we'd have struggled to keep up with the results that they've been knocking out. But yeah, I just think it seems a shame that something so great has been peed all over by so many. And I think there's just been no chance to actually celebrate the fact that we won four trebles and that we've got nine titles in a row. And I think it's a shame. But it's how you deal with it. And somebody's got to go to jail, whether that's Peter, whether that's Neil Lennon, whether it's the coaching staff, whether it's Nick Hammond. I don't know. Somebody's got to go to jail. Somebody's got to take the blame for this. Because status quo isn't an option going forwards in terms of board, manager, coaches, recruitment. You kind of keep everything the same. Something's got to change in order for this to be different next season.
I don't know about you, George, but I also think one of the problems at big clubs in terms of the way the players have been, you know, we talked at the beginning of the podcast there about the insipid performance against Ross County yesterday. I also think, particularly at big clubs, when things start to go badly, the players know. And I don't think it's specifically a conscious thing that they're deliberately not trying, but it's just that extra effort doesn't go into it because they know. They know this is all changing. He's not going to be manager next season because that doesn't happen at big clubs. Do you think that could be part of the problem in terms of why the downward spiral's accelerated so rapidly?
Well, they had this stuff about he'd lost the dressing room and things like that, and who knows, but there was obviously a lack of confidence in the way they were playing. It seemed to me a lack of belief in what they were trying to do when they had all those mediocre results. But if you remember, I got in touch with you shortly after the Ferenc Varos game, having watched Neil Lennon's press conferences. And I suggested to you that given his background of admitted bipolarism, that the Celtic board should have been doing more to protect him. And I think that the pressure that was heaped on him, and he was seen as the scapegoat, but even by people like me in terms of tactics and the way he went about it, heaped more pressure on him. And I didn't think he reacted well at all, and they didn't protect him. Now, he did say himself at one point, if things weren't working, he would step aside. I don't think he's capable of that. And they never gave him an option to step aside. And that is what Duncan was referring to, that disgraceful performance after the Ross County game. just hardened the board's hearts in terms of they weren't going to be dictated to by a bunch of hooligans. And a lot of folk took that badly. I didn't. I thought they were quite right to harden their hearts with regards to that demonstration.
And throwing barriers and stones.
Scandalous.
I thought you said they were quite right to do that.
Sorry. Oh, no. I thought the board were right.
Sorry.
Not to be influenced by them. Now, they've come in for a lot of criticism for that. But to a degree, you think, well, if you give in to mob rule, the mob rules. Now, I've often thought for a long time, this will go down like a lead balloon, that when we got into bed with the Green Brigade, if you're going to sup with them, you're going to sup with the devil, you sup with a long spoon. And there was always a potential for conflict. In fact, I was looking at their website last night, and they're quite proud of the fact that there's conflict between them and the club.
And yeah, ultras, you can't have a group of ultras and expect them not to be ultras, right? I mean, I get them. We've all, Celtic pick and choose. I mean, they use so much of the Green Brigade to sell an inverted commas Celtic, but then whenever they step out of line, and it's like managing a petulant child and a naughty kid. You've got to manage it, but
yeah.
sticking up banners and you see banners and Christ knows who's running Celtic security, but for people to put banners up right in front of statues to Brother Walfred and Jock Stein. That are quite horrible, and then be able to get into Lennox Town and put barriers up in the fence. I mean, surely how difficult is it for somebody to stop that, or at 6 o'clock in the morning go and remove it? I mean, I find it is like absolute noddy stuff in terms of how some of the things that we've managed at this year with Celtic, and that's one of them. How do these things happen?
I think the point I was trying to make was that Neil Lennon was under pressure right from the start of the season.
Yeah.
And he made his displeasure known about the way the players had indicated their wish to leave, things like that. And it just piled on him. And things just got worse and worse. And when they lost to Rangers in such an inept way, because I remember, if we'd beaten Rangers that day, we'd have gone top with a game in hand. And after that, it just went downhill.
Yeah, we didn't lay a glove on them that day, George. Nope. We didn't have a shot on target. I mean, at least at Ibrox we put a performance in, it didn't go our way. But that first game at Celtic Park, you're right. It was just we didn't lay a glove on them. You wonder how much
of that came from the fact that his outburst after the Ferenc Varos game really annoyed a lot of the players. You know, not normally you hear about managers who back their players. He didn't that night. And yet his team selection was much to blame.
But to be fair to him, there was 6 first-team players out through having to self-isolate because of international duty.
Yes, of course. For the Rangers game.
For the Rangers game, yeah.
Yes, of course, aye. But even at that, they didn't put up much of a show.
No,
they didn't. And you know, it's interesting that you look back and you know as you pointed out, Duncan, I was quite vitriolic at the Ferenc Varos game. I would like to think that ever since then, we have tried to look for reasons on this podcast rather than just continually say it's shite and it is shite. We've tried to look for reasons for it. Not saying that we agree with some of, you know, when people have been, why have the board kept Neil Lennon in situ? Again, we've tried to look for the thought process as to why that would be the case.
Yeah.
But it's interesting when you look back on these events, as you've just quite rightly pointed out, George, you look back at the real anger around the Rangers game, and if we'd won it, we would have gone top of the league. You look back at that night when people threw the stuff at the bus. And actually, excluding the Ross County game that's just happened, if we'd not chucked all the points away straight after the Dubai trip,
yeah,
we wouldn't be such a distance behind Rangers. It's been a really odd season. I think, and again, I'm a big cricket fan. You know, one of the massive things people talk about in cricket is scoreboard pressure. Why teams capitulate in the final innings of a game when they've scored the runs in the first innings. You know, they've been competitive all through the game, but they suddenly get to the fourth innings and chuck it and collapse. And they continually talk about it's scoreboard pressure, because suddenly the number on the board looks like a big number. And I do think, and I'm not saying it could be only a 5% impact, it could only be a 2% impact, or it could be a 15% impact. I do think the two postponed games created massive scoreboard pressure on Celtic this season.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I totally agree. I totally agree. I mean, I think it's... If we were to get a result at Ibrox that day, and it's sliding doors, the beat on red card, I mean, they beat us, didn't have a shot on target, it was an own goal, the Griffiths shot, McGregor had the game of his life, it's sliding doors. If we'd have won that game, I think we'd be talking an entirely different season. And you're talking about cricket, they always say in cricket, you look at a scoreboard, what happens if you lose two wickets? The scoreboard looks very different. That gets the same in football. If you can get Rangers within one or two losses, their arse will start getting twitchy. That hasn't happened. We've never come near them. And they've just left us. They've left us in their wake. And they'll be getting a guard of the honour at Celtic Park in a couple of weeks.
The same thing's happened in golf. The last three golf tournaments, the player who's led for the first three rounds has not won, because he hasn't been winning. You know, the pressure gets to them.
Yeah, I mean, there's some crazy... I mean, you look at... Even Scotland winning at Twickenham. I mean, that's an intimidating place to play Twickenham, 80,000 England fans. All of these things, we know fans. And like I say, those teams I was talking about earlier, PSG, fourth in their league, Liverpool, sixth, Porto, third, Juventus, sixth. It's a mental season. And we've got a guy through basketball that's our account manager from Bet365, which is a gambling partner we have. And he was telling me, I forget the numbers, but it's something like, there's only three results you can have in a football game, a home, win and away, win and a draw. And typically, and again, I'm making it, typically you get 60% or 62% home wins. Mm-hmm. But since COVID, it's like low 50s. The number of away wins, and it's Liverpool don't lose for like two or three years at Anfield. Lost like the last three or four games. It's mental. That doesn't help. That's not going to make us feel any better when we have probably a trophyless season this year after such a famine. After such a feast, we're going to a famine.
It's curious though that I read a statistic really quite early in the season where they reckoned that where there was no crowd, even though the players seemed to be running the same amount, that they weren't. Do you know what I mean? When they looked at their stats. Now, I do think, I'm not saying Celtic are the only one, but I think some teams have benefited from not having had a crowd.
I think Rangers have benefited. Yeah, I mean, again, I had said some of this on a previous podcast, and a couple of people, were having a go thinking I was coming up with excuses. I'm not, as I've said, this might only be a 1% impact, and, 99% could be because Neil Lennon's been picking the wrong team. I'm not saying, but all of these things have an impact. Last season, Rangers, as you talked about, Duncan, with the twitchy arse stuff, last season, Rangers fell apart from New Year, and it was at Ibrox that they fell apart. They were losing games and drawing games at Ibrox. The fans were getting agitated and getting on their back. Now, by all accounts, they played Kilmarnock off the pitch on Saturday and won 1-0. But it was still only 1-0. If that was with a full Ibrox, granted a wee bit different now because they're so far ahead, but can you imagine if they were 1-0 up, say they were only 3-6 points clear, 1-0 up with Kilmarnock with 15 minutes to go.
Yeah.
The atmosphere at Ibrox would have been incredibly different.
Yeah.
And that's when somebody makes a mistake, Kilmarnock go out the pitch and score, and because that's what was happening last season. And whilst, as I say, I know every team's in the same boat, but I do think they are one of the teams that have benefited from lack of crowds, because they benefited from fans not being agitated. in tight games.
Yeah, no, but I'd agree. And it has, like you say, it's they're not having their fans on their backs probably helped them. And I think Celtic not having the fans to give them a wee push on and to go on their backs when they're not pleased the way things are going, I think it's made a massive difference to us this season. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what nobody knows what next season looks like. I'm pretty sure there'll be fans back, but whether there's 10 or 20,000 or 50,000 in there next year, I don't know. But it'll certainly be fans back next season. I'm pretty confident of that.
The counter, I suppose, the counter to that would be, I really would be really surprised if there was full houses at Celtic Park. If the results had been as they've been, I would be surprised if Neil Lennon was still in situ if there was supporters at Celtic Park. Because although your point, George, about not giving in to the baying mob, it's very different when you can shut the doors, put the fences up and stay away from the baying mob. It's very different to you're sitting inside the ground and the baying mob are turning around and throwing pies and Mars bars at you.
No, I mean, I don't know. I probably agree with you on that point that it would maybe the board will have reacted differently. But even if we're allowed full capacity again, I have no idea, and none of us have any idea on how many season tickets Celtic will sell for next season. I don't know. It might have been on here. Somebody said there was a waiting list of about 15,000 or something. I'm not sure how many of that 15,000 would step up if they're given the chance. But yeah, but I don't know how many season tickets Celtic will sell next year. And that's a worry because financially, our last set of financial results didn't look that bad. The next ones will look pretty bad. There'll be a whole bunch of, I imagine, a lot more fans will take refunds this year than took them last year. They might not sell as many season tickets next season. It's going to be hard to sell sponsorship next season, not because of 10 in a row, but just because companies have got less money. And then you factor in Brexit, it's going to have an impact as well on recruitment. There's some strong financial problems coming for us when we perhaps will need to buy a dozen players. So it's going to be a challenge for the incoming CEO.
The bit about the season ticket sales, one of the things that I hear in a lot of podcasts, and I listen to a lot of them, some of them just shake my head at them, but there's a common theme about a lack of communication from the board about what they intend to do. And a lot of people are sitting waiting to think, what are you going to do? Now, you hear all sorts of rumours about a director of football coming in, and there's been a name trotted out in the press. I heard the same name again today, and also linked to a new incoming head coach. Now, if they were to come out and say it is our intention to appoint X and Y, I think a lot of people might think twice and renew their tickets. But until they know, they're sitting waiting for information. And the lack of information coming out of that boardroom is appalling.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all, George. I think you're absolutely right. People are going to hold their money until they know what next season looks like. And if that means, and I don't really know what a director of football is. I think that's, I assume that's what Nick Hammond is. I don't know the difference between head of recruitment and director of football. It sounds like a different title to me. But yeah, I mean, in terms of how, who's going to be, is it going to be Neil Lennon? Is it going to be like a rock and roll appointment and Dermot's going to put his hand in his pocket? Or is it going to be some project from Austria or something, the next big thing? We don't know. And why would you, as a consumer and as a customer, get behind something that you don't know what it's going to look like?
See, I listen to these, as I say, these podcasts, and they go on and on about this, the managerial model, or the manager needs, he needs to have the last say. There's ample evidence from all over the world, especially in Europe, where the director of football is a guy who oversees all the football operations, and that includes the youth academy and youth development and things like that, which Neil, to my mind, has no interest in, because he doesn't play young players. But, you know, if that's the guy's remit, and you get a coach, a good coach, and you say, coach the first team, we'll provide you with good players. You'll have an input to that, but you're not going to have the final say. That seems to be heresy among some of the Celtic support, that the manager doesn't get to choose his own players. Managers are not particularly good at choosing players. With ample evidence of that.
Well, the other point I continually make is, fine in the days of Clough and Taylor, where you sign players from 50 miles of where your team plays. But when you've got an international, players are coming from everywhere, then the manager can't be expected to know all of that. Plus, you know, one of the benefits, I mean, for me, director of football is a no-brainer. You know, you have someone, a director in charge of the football division, as you quite rightly say, George, that means that guy's ultimately in charge of the academy and the structure in the academy. He's ultimately in charge of the sports science division. He's ultimately in charge of the scouting network, and people feed into him. Doesn't mean he's necessarily the boss of the manager, but it's about then setting the culture and having that steady hand. Again, if you've got in modern football, certainly elite clubs, if coaches are dropping in and out every 2 to 3 years tops, you know, if you have a Brendan Rodgers situation where he goes February, the benefit of the director of football is you've got that continuity. You've got the guy who the scouts are still feeding in exactly the same way. The academy's still operating exactly the same way. All that's happened is one senior, you know, if you think from a business perspective, one senior executive's gone and you're going to get another senior executive in.
The problem you have with that, Brian, I agree with what you said there. The problem you've got with that, if we had that model in place, I don't think Brendan Rodgers would have come here, because Brendan Rodgers would come here and go, I'm coming and I'm bringing him and her, and they're running all of this. Know this structure you've already got. If you want me to come and run this club, I'm running it with my people. That it's okay maybe for a Ronnie Dyla to come in and do that, maybe even for a Neil Lennon that said to come in and do that this time round. But you're I don't think a rock star manager like Brendan Rodgers, if that's what he is, or Rafa Benitez, or whoever these guys are, I don't think they would want to fit around that.
But Rafa Benitez, Rafa Benitez, if he went to Real Madrid, would have that structure. He's not running the academy. He's not dealing with the HR issues of the sports science department. You know, I get your point. But that is part of the reason why Brendan came to Celtic, because he did get offered that level of authority. I mean, I would argue that the ultimate problem with that structure is we had John Park, who had a reasonable record at signing players, with the exception of particular strikers. What was it, 20-odd strikers or something he signed? We then replaced John Park with Congerton, who had a dreadful record on players. We then swap out Congerton and bring in Hammond, who... I don't know how much input he had into this summer, but if he did, it doesn't look like it was great. Whereas if you have a more embedded, a 20 scout structure of people who are living and working, and, you know, I'm sure, you know, I know Celtic have got scouts who are based in Lennoxtown who, you know, Celtic got a Y Scout subscription, and they'll look at the players in the Y Scout, and then somebody from the senior, you know, normally in non-COVID times, somebody from the senior management team, John Kennedy or Neil or somebody, would go across and watch that player in real life. But for me, the benefit of having that really deep structure of 4 or 5 scouts in South America, 2 or 3 in the Balkans and, you know, wherever, is the guy who's down boots on the ground, but he's a Celtic employee, so his only priority is Celtic, but he's there and he knows everybody. He might say, that guy's good, but... he's got a bit of a reputation for being a lazy sod in training. You're going to get the extra nuance that you wouldn't get.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously it's an issue not being able to go and see players playing just now. You can't just jump a plane and go watch somebody play. But I get baffled. I see this in basketball, how we can bring players in from the States and them be so bad. I just find staggering. I don't know anything about basketball. But I'm amazed how often we get it wrong. But equally... I know, like you say, I put my hands up. When we signed Duffy, I thought it'd be a good signing. And when you see that you've signed a goalie that you think, like, who is this guy? I've never heard of him, but that's not unusual. But he's played Champions League games, he's played international games. He's a good, he's from a good club. And then to get that so wrong, and when you've got a head of recruitment that I believe used to be a goalie, and you've got a goalkeeping coach in Stevie Woods that's been there forever and a day, for them to sign off £5 million on that goalie, I think that's a straight red card offence for me. To get that so wrong, whether it's his character or what have you, there's nothing I have seen in that goalie that tells me he's going to be a successful goalkeeper for Celtic. He's got nothing in his game, and we signed off on that. So there's something fundamentally wrong with our recruitment, either model or structure or something. Because that, to get that, so wrong, it's staggering.
That's my point. You know, if, say, for instance, because he has played Champions League football and he has played, and he can't be, you know, the one thing I keep thinking is, he's not made a save because he's not chucked the ball in the back of the net. I can't believe that he's not got something. So then you think, right, okay, so is the reason, is the issue he's not settled in Scotland? Is the reason that actually he's the type of personality that when things are going along well, he's great, and when things aren't going so well, then he goes off in the corner and sulks and doesn't try a leg? But again, that for me, that sort of background information about, well, the only problem is when he's going through a bad run, he's a lazy sod.
It's character.
That's the type of information that you can do all the scouting on Y-Scout, and you can go and watch him in a game, but you're only going to know that if you've got scouts who live and work in that country and have direct feedback. Mm-hmm. And that's where, for me, one of our issues is we don't have that scouting network.
But again, if you look, I don't have what you're talking about, something there, my scout, and I can imagine what it is. Obviously, I don't have access to that. But even if you just look at something as basic and as fragile as Wikipedia, he's not played anywhere 50 games a season. It's 25, 20. He's in and out as the Greek national keeper. He's in and out as the AK Athens or wherever he came from. It's like if you're looking at Celtic players and you look at Mikey Johnson, and it's 4 games this season, 6 games that season, and then you look at a Callum McGregor, 50, 60, 50, 50. He's not somebody that's played a huge amount of games. But look, I'm not hating on a goalie. I think he hasn't worked. He's had something. But that just sums up our recruitment. To go and get him from a head of recruitment that, I didn't know this, apparently used to be a goalie.
Stevie Woods thought he was a good investment.
He must have. I mean, that's Nick Hammond as an ex-goalie and head of recruitment. Stevie Woods as a goalie coach must have sat down and looked at 4 or 5 options and said it's a good idea to spend £5 million on this guy.
I remember reading through that, you know, Gregory Onidas, the guy who was Samaras's agent.
Mm.
I think he might have been involved in the transfer, but he likes the Celtic. He's pro Celtic. He thought it was a great signing for Celtic.
No.
So something hasn't worked out. And I don't agree. I don't agree he hasn't made a save. Because see, in the very early games, up at Ross County and places like that, he did make some good saves. Mainly saves caused by defensive errors. But as you say, when the going got tough, he was letting in goals because he was left totally exposed. Some of the goals that he let in, he was just left on his own. And okay, maybe Fraser Foster might have saved some of them. I don't know if he'd have saved them all. But the guy couldn't have got to international level and been a complete dud.
No, I agree. Totally agree.
Something's not worked out. Did he not play against the Celtic?
He did, yeah. When Brenda was shutting the rattle out of the pram.
Yeah, they knocked us out.
And Boyata was refusing to play.
Yeah.
We've had our blips along the way, but this is obviously the biggest one. I think, I just think you get a director in charge of the football division, whatever you want to call it, but somebody who deals with everything, and so you can say to the first team coach, we've got this well-oiled machine here that's working well, and you can slot in. You're the main man. You make the decisions about anybody who comes up through the academy, and you make the decisions about who we sign. You just tell me what you tell the director of football what type of player you want. He goes and instructs that to the scouts to go and get some sources. The scouts come along and say, we can get these players. You choose them.
Yeah. And I think the good thing is that with a new CEO coming in that isn't really an out-and-out football man. He's a fan. And I've met him a couple of times, actually, in his role at the SRU. He's obviously, he's a different species to Peter. Peter's very old-school micromanager and controls everything. And if we wanted, he's probably our director of football, Peter. But if this new guy's coming in, I imagine his style is going to be to put five or six people in key positions off the pitch and let them run their business and let them do their thing and not be micromanaging them. And you'd imagine that football operations will have an overhaul, whatever that looks like, and that they'll be allowed to get on with it. My concern is they're going to have no money to spend.
The biggest mistake I think we can make is if the club believes that this season's a blip. Because I would argue this season's a culmination of a series of little mistakes.
Yeah, but if we'd all be, there weren't a couple of good performances when we won those five games there. If we'd have started to look more like our old self and scraped out a win at Ross County yesterday and beat Aberdeen this weekend and then we beat Rangers when they come in, you start to think, yes, it probably was just a blip. We're going to put it down to COVID. But when you see, if you think that is the case, and then you watch yesterday's game, you think, oh, actually, that's deja vu all over again, and it's Ross County.
Eileen said to me last night, does that result suit you? I said, of course not. But in a sense, you're thinking, no, maybe, yeah. Because they have to get the message that, as you say, it's not a blip. Major surgery is required. Now, I was looking today at Manchester City's structure. I know they're a different league from us altogether, but they've got a very, very different divisions doing different jobs, but all interacting eventually through to providing Pep with the materials to get a winning team in the park. And that's ideally what we should be looking at. But we should also be making sure that the youth academy is not just a gesture. Because we haven't brought a good youth player in for a long time. And if you look at the youth players that we've let go and now are leaving before they even get to the reserve stage, that's alarming. Because it must be costing us money.
I think that, for me, that's the biggest challenge we've got. Because patently, by the fact that we hoover up all the young talent, patently, we must have the best. I've said this many times in the podcast. We must have the best kids under the age of, say, 17 in Scottish football. Some may be at Rangers. Most of them will be at us. And as you then say, George, with the exception of Kieran Tierney, James Forrest, Callum McGregor, they're not coming... They're not then making that change from being the best 16, 17-year-olds to them being the best 21-year-olds. I mean, but it's not a new phenomenon. I remember people getting very agitated about we should sign James McFadden. And me saying, well, what's the difference between James McFadden and Sean Maloney? Apart from the fact that James McFadden's playing first-team football every week and Sean Maloney's not. But the reason Sean Maloney's not is because we've got Hartson and Larson and Sutton and players of that calibre in the team. So that is always a very difficult conundrum to solve, to get them through. My concern is that what we've had is an academy that's not really produced much, and now what we're getting is the coaches who are in the academy, and again, they might turn around and, to paraphrase somebody else who's been on a podcast, they might want to punch me in the face for making this comment. But I don't know them. I don't know their ability. But it just looks, as an outsider, that what we've got is players who came through that academy and had OK careers are now being our coaches in that academy. Uh-huh. I would just like, there's a part of me would like us to to bring in some, try and bring in some elite coaches. You know, look at the Balkans, look at the countries that are producing good young talent and bring their coaches in and say, right, okay.
I remember Gary Lineker did a programme when Ajax were in their pomp, still winning European Cups, and they went and looked at the Ajax Academy to see what it was they were doing. And there's a young coach working with, I think it was the 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds. And he was very patient with them, but he was strict with them. Do you know what I mean? And they said that the best coaches are required at that level. The best coaches in the academy were working with the younger players to teach them good habits. And I thought, that's interesting. But I'm like you, I would have a clear out of the coaching staff from top to bottom.
But like I say, the challenge is how do you bridge that gap between a guy who patently at 17, 18 is going to be raw and isn't going to be first team ready unless he's some exceptional talent? How do you bridge that gap to get him into the first team? And I think that's the reason why, if you look at players that we have brought through in the last few years, without decrying the positions, you can get away with an average left back. So you bring a young player in, Kieran Tierney, who obviously is better than average. But the point being, that's not a key position that's going to have an obvious error. James Forrest coming through on the right wing. A winger is a player who can come in and out of a game. Callum McGregor, middle of the pitch, although we sent Callum McGregor on loan. You can start to bring people through. For me, it's no coincidence that the two positions that we've not really brought anybody through in are two areas of the pitch where if a young player makes errors, he'll be crucified for, and that's up front and centre-half.
Yes.
Exactly. Or a goalie.
Well, there's another. Yeah. Don't get me started on sticking with Hazard and just playing him, or Ross Doohan, one of the two of them, just playing them.
Yeah.
They're both international goalkeepers.
Yeah. And it's hard. I think actually goalie's the hardest position for that to happen in. But one of the things I don't like about football, and I used to love. I remember the first Celtic season ticket I got, you could get into the reserve games with your season ticket. And I'd go and watch the reserves. And your only window into Celtic was really when you read the Celtic View. And you're always looking to see who's scoring all the goals and who's the players that's coming through. There's no real level of football in Scotland for a reserve league. And the only option really is to send a young player out on loan, like they did with McGregor, and to a lesser extent what they did with Christie. I know we didn't develop him as a player. But you've not really got any alternative because there's not a reserve league. And I know it's back on the agenda to have Colts teams back in League One and in League Two in Scotland. It's actually Rangers that's pushing it. And that's getting revisited again. But players need games. And when you throw in a Welsh, I don't know, he might be a good player. It's too early to say yet. And he then loses a bad goal, like you say, Brian. It inevitably... It shatters his confidence. The same for Hazard. It's hard to breed these players. And I don't know, but maybe be controversial. Scrap your youth team. Like, forget all this youth team rubbish and just go and do the Brentford model and just buy, have a structure. If you look at Brentford's transfer model and the success that they've had and the money they've made out of being a player trading club, it is unbelievable. I mean, like you say, but who's the next person that's going to come through? Who's the next Tierney or McGregor or Forrest? I don't know what that youth academy costs to run a season. I'm guessing it's a couple of million quid anyway. So unless you're getting a first team player every 4 or 5 years minimum, it's not really paying for itself. You've got hundreds and hundreds of kids that think they're playing for the Celtic just because they're in a youth system. I've forgot about Project Brave. I don't know what happened with that, if it's still going or what's happening, but there's no structure for these kids to play. There's no reserve league or anything.
No, the only thing you can do, obviously, again, this is not during these COVID times, but the only thing you could really do would be to just enter your team in every single international youth tournament, mini youth tournament that's going on around the world. You'd basically just have to go to South America, You know, I'm pretty sure there's two or three invitational youth tournaments going on in Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, or wherever. Go to the Americas, go to Mexico or USA or Canada. I'm sure there's youth tournaments, and I think that might be the only solution. I mean, I agree with the Colts model. I think it's no coincidence that those countries that have B teams for the big clubs are able to bring players through. It's the only way to do it. It's the only way to bridge that gap of playing amongst 17 and 18 year olds and suddenly having some men kicking about who put you in the balls when the referee's not looking.
Well, Rangers sent three players to Queen of the South on loan. And Queen of the South, I think, were near enough bottom of the league. And they're now in the playoffs. Now, the fact that they sent three players means they'll get pals there. Rather than send a player here and a player there, send a group to a club like that that will play them.
And the way that I think that works, George, is I think Queen of the South are a part-time team. And I think that those boys that are at Rangers train with Rangers during the day and twice a week go and train with Queen of the South and play for them weekend. So they're at Rangers. They're at Murray Park doing their thing and then going to the two or three nights a week training at Queen of the South and then playing for them the weekend.
But I thought the idea of sending them as a group was a good idea, you know.
The thing is, though, Queen of the South still have no incentive to develop those people as players. Getting back to the comment we made right at the beginning of the podcast about Celtic's priorities just now, I believe, are different to the manager's priorities. Queen of the South's priorities in those players will be different to Rangers' priorities. Queen of the South's priority, if one of those players, for argument's sake, you know, if I use Mark Burchill as an example, if one of those players can put the ball in the back of the net where he's one-on-one with the keeper and is pretty fast, then all Queen of the South will be interested in is playing that guy as a striker on the shoulder, the last defender, and play the ball over the top and get him to do the thing he can already do. There is no incentive for them to coach him to become a more rounded striker. That's still the problem of a loan system.
Duncan says he's getting coached at Rangers.
But if we're talking about the purpose of this is to become a better player by playing games, well, when he's in the game, Queen of the South are not going to they're not going to coach him about developing other aspects of his game. They're going to be they're only going to be interested in him in that.
No, because I don't know this. That'll be Queen of the South's business model. They'll have like 10, 12 part-time players and five or six loanees that are training with a club during the day. That's the business model. With a view not to developing players, but to keep them in the championship.
So what if we did? A wise man suggested this to me, and I thought it was. I'll raise it on the podcast. What if we then
take over Queen of the South?
No, because Scottish football wouldn't allow that. What if we sold some of our emerging talent at cheap prices, or you know, virtually nothing? But we get first option to buy them back at £500,000 or, you know, 150 grand, or, you know, relative to whatever price they pay. So the incentive for Queen of the South is to develop that guy into a player that we would then buy back for £500,000 or 125 or whatever.
Is that not what that guy at Manchester City, whose name has been suggested as Celtic's director of football, is that not what he does?
No, it's not quite the same, because they still stick their players out on loan. This would be actually Queen of the South, if we pick Queen of the South. Queen of the South sign the guy that, what was his name, the keeper, was it Kelly? Was it Kelly that we just let go to Liverpool? Mm-hmm. Queen of the South sign him for, you know, 10 grand or whatever, with Celtic having a first option on him at 250 grand or whatever. So then Queen of the South at, you know, by the age of X, and then a different price by the age of Y or whatever. Then Queen of the South have got an incentive to develop him as a player, because best case scenario for our, you know, the most extreme case scenario is he does develop as a player and we sign him back for £250,000. Next best case scenario is we don't want to sign him, but somebody else signs him for that type of money. You know, maybe we don't need him, but somebody else goes and signs him, or Queen of the South, for $250,000 or $500,000. Next best case scenario, he's not quite good enough for us. We don't sign him, but he becomes a decent Queen of the South player. Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario is he doesn't make it a Queen of the South. But there's more potential positives for Queen of the South in that system than just giving him on loan.
I mean, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, it just occurred to me when we were talking about the loan players we brought in. When you think of the loan players we'd had in the past, people like Denaya, you know, they were really good players. We had them on loan. But they were on loan from a parent club. Do you know what I mean? They weren't on loan because they weren't good enough to play for that team's first team. They were young players who had been sent out for development.
Yeah, we're Queen of the South in that analogy. Yeah. They're sent to us to develop them.
Yeah.
But again, getting back to the point I made about the example of if we sell them to Queen of the South, if we'd done too good a job on Denier and he'd become good enough for Man City's first team, all we've done is polished him up to be good enough for Man City's first team.
That's sort of what we've done with Fraser Forster first time round.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we've done, because he came there from Newcastle, wasn't it?
Newcastle, yeah.
And he came, and then, yeah, I mean, I don't like the loans. I prefer a loan with a view to buy. It's a sort of try before you buy. And I'd say getting somebody like Harry Kane on loan for a season at Celtic. I don't know why I said him. It's crazy because there's no circumstances that exist on this planet where you can afford to buy that player. And he's just there for a 6-month gig. But I don't like that. I like the idea of getting a player on loan with a view to buying them, like we did with Edward. Mm-hmm. But again, we paid I had to remind somebody that yesterday. We were talking about cashing in on Edward. I'm not sure people, like, when they think about selling Edward for whatever his market value is now, say it's £20 million, I don't know what it is. We did pay £9 million for him. It's not as if he's not a player we bought for £2 or £3 million. There's £9 million. And anything between a 30% and a 60% sell-on clause, depending on who you listen to. So we're not going to make a shedload of money on Edward. We might have done last summer.
But then that gets back to the point I was making about if we're looking for a system where we get our young players out to try and develop the first team football, it's got to be a system, you know, getting back to your point there, Duncan, about there's no point bringing in Harry Kane on loan because what's the value for us? There's got to be an incentive for the club that player goes to develop him as a player and not just give him game time, but give him game time so that he becomes a better player with that game time and some system where they benefit from doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I see details of loan moves in football, and it'll often be something like, say, Rangers and Queen of the South, because we were talking about them. Rangers might say to Queen of the South, right, you can have this player. He earns £1,000 a week at Rangers. You're paying £200 a week towards his salary. But see, if he doesn't play, you're paying £400. That goes on in football. That goes on contractually on loan deals. That you can have him for free as long as he plays, but if you don't play him, you're getting charged more for him. So that's it. They're forcing them to pick the players and develop them and get them game time. And it used to be, I think McGregor's the first one I remember. It used to be if you went out on loan, that was the beginning of you leaving the club at Celtic. And yeah. McGregor was one of the first that went to Notts County. And it felt like he went there with a genuine view to develop him, to have him back rather than just to get him out. And then the same obviously happened with Ryan Christie.
So
we bought Ryan Christie. We bought him.
But we sent him out on loan. We sent him up to Aberdeen, didn't we? We left him. We loaned him twice. We bought him and kept him at Inverness, I think. Then he came to us and he went to Aberdeen and he really filled out physically and got a lot of game time for Aberdeen. And he came back and I think he came back and I think he was within like a breath of going to Hibs. Actually, I think if we'd have got McGinn, I think that he was going to Hibs as part of the McGinn deal. And then, of course, Christie comes off the bench at Murrayfield against Hearts. Yeah. And then he's never left the team since, really.
No. And he's a valued member of the international team.
Yes.
But the bottom, I said at the time, we were buying the best young midfield player in Scotland. Because he was a terrific young player. He won a Scottish Cup medal playing for Inverness-Carlin.
That's right.
And we
he needed game time.
He did. After he came to us, he did. He was getting game time at Inverness-Carlin before we bought him.
And it's his birthday today.
Is it?
Aye, it's his birthday today. Aye.
I think he's a player who's come back. I don't think he's the player that he was a year ago, 2 years ago.
I think he's like a couple of players in our team. I think they think they're much better than they are. And their pals are playing elsewhere and earning shed loads of money.
Yeah.
And they don't really... I mean, I'm not saying that Ryan Christie or Chris Iyer or Edward or Roberts don't give a shit about Celtic. Of course they do, but they don't give a shit about Celtic like me and you do, or Kieran Tierney does.
No,
they don't care. They're in a career. They want to maximise it. They want to go and earn as much money as they can. I think they want. And I agree with you. I don't think nobody's had a good season. I struggle to find a player of the year this year. But I agree with you. Ryan's going back to us, and I think he's out of contract at the end of next season.
Yeah.
But I do also think part of our problem is the system that we're currently playing for. You know, the Ross County game, we're playing this 4-4-2 with a diamond in the middle, and Ross County was a prime example. Our diamond was made up with, or our team was made up with three guys whose optimum position is number 10.
Yeah.
In Turnbull, Rogic and Christie.
And McGregor.
Well, I would say McGregor's more of a number 8, but the problem then is, the problem for me is, if you go back and watch that game, there was times when Scott Brown was playing deeper than the centre-halves. And for some reason, he was also, a lot of the time, out wide in a line with the centre-halves out in the right-back position. So that then makes Callum McGregor drop deeper and be slightly out of the centre to be able to pick up the ball from Brown. And so you then have Brown almost at the centre-half level, McGregor sitting on top of Brown down there, then this huge gap, and then three other people who are all wanting to play number 10. And the point I'm making is there's knock-on effects of Callum McGregor doesn't play so well when Scott Brown's playing in that position, sitting on top of the back four, and then you've got this massive gap, and then you've got Christie, who's not playing his preferred position because he's sort of outright to be accommodating of Turnbull or Rogic or whoever, or he's playing up front. For some reason,
I think we're compensating because it's ridiculous. I mean, Edward, I mean, even though he just looks like he's just not interested at times, he's going to be your first pick striker. It should then automatically be anybody from Ayeti, Klamala, and Griffiths, three on paper expensive quality strikers, but neither of the three of them, for different reasons, maybe can be trusted, and you've then got to play. Rogic is a striker, or Christie is a striker, and you're then, it's a bit like the Scotland team going out their way to accommodate Kieran Tierney and Robertson in the same team. It makes it imbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Anyway, we've got a game on Saturday against Aberdeen. We're at home. What's your expectations, George? Are we going to bounce back from the defeat against Ross County and go on and thump the Dons, the mighty Dons? Or is it going to be another turgid affair when you... Do you know what this season reminds me of a lot? Ronnie Dyla's last season, Gordon Strachan's last season, and Martin O'Neill's last season, where you would go home, you know, particularly games we won, you would go home and my wife would say, so how was today? Oh, fine. What was the score? We won. What was the score? 2-0. Anything happened? You wouldn't have been able to describe anything that happened in the game apart from saying we won. That was it. It just took the best you could say is the game took place. This reminds me of in games we win. So what are you expecting, George?
Well, I think last week Aberdeen showed that they can pose a threat, because we were hanging on last week against Aberdeen. and they've got something to play for still. They still want to get to third place. So I think it'll be a hard game. Because that, yesterday, can't have done anything for our confidence. Because it was really tortured. So, who knows what Celtic... Well, you say, who knows what Celtic will turn up. But the team that's played this season has been the least inspiring Celtic team I can remember. In terms of getting your blood going.
Duncan?
Yeah, I mean, it's Aberdeen again. They've been struggling. I mean, I think they've gone a club record for not scoring goals. I think it won at the weekend, though. But yeah, I mean, I'm much of the same way. I think Aberdeen fans are treating McInnes appallingly just now. And I think he's got a point to prove. And as George says there, they've got a lot to fight for. So they're going to come knowing that they really pushed us last week. So they're going to be reasonably confident. I can't imagine there'll be many changes in our team because there's nobody really to bring in. I mean, I don't know. I imagine maybe somebody like Sorrow comes in. But, I mean, I can't really see that much changing in a team. But I think we probably will grind out one of those 2-0 games and that your wife can say to you, how was that for you, Brian? And you go, meh. 2-0, nothing happened. Who knows? We might go 1-7-0.
You jest. Is it me you tell him,
Duncan? I know. I'm not even convincing myself, George. I don't know.
All right, okay. Well, with that, I will say, guys, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Take care, boys. Love on the rocks.
Ain't no surprise. Hope you enjoyed the podcast again. We say on the pod, we try not to be just this is crap and give some reasons. Three of us have slightly different opinions on how much is the manager's responsibility for this. Try to give some external reasons for it, not mitigating or defending, just saying that these factors all come into play. Anyway, there'll be more podcasts along soon. Don't forget, no matter how frustrated you are with the club just now, Celtic FC's Foundation do fantastic work, so get on their website. If you're in a fortunate financial position that you can do something to help them and contribute, please do so. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight. They say they want you. What you need, you can say what you want, not much you can do when the feeling is gone. Maybe blue skies above, but it's cool when your love's on the rocks. They say they want you. Love on the rocks. It ain't no big surprise. Just pour me a drink and I'll tell you my lies.
Yesterday's gone, and now all I want.